This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Welcome to Elgin Talk. Selecting a manager can be challenging, even more challenging with the amount of uncertainty in the economy and global markets today. My name is Justin Nukasi. I'm the head of retail investments and the chair of the manager research group, the MRG. I'm joined by two members of the MRG today, Morel Ben-Simon, who focuses on equities in the manager research group, and Francis Chua, who is a PM portfolio manager and leads on the fixed income side. So let's get straight into it. Let's talk about this manager selection challenge and get some real insight on how to select managers. So let's start with past performance. I remember doing a study a few years ago, maybe a decade ago, where I looked at top quartile managers and the persistency of those top quartile managers over 3 to 5 years, and then the next 3 to 5 years. And actually you found that the managers in the top quartile in the next 3 to 5 years, there was a low persistency of people, of managers that stayed in that top quartile in the next 3 to 5 years. So is the industry as a whole, because we use past performance quite a lot as a marketing tool, is the industry as a whole focused too much on this? Or would you say there are other aspects that we really need to think about and dig deeper in when really assessing managers?
So, hi Justin, Francis. So performance is definitely one aspect that we look at when we're assessing a fund. But we usually take a sum of all parts approach. So the way that we look at a fund is we have a few different aspects that we address and research. So they include the firm, the product itself, the philosophy, the team, the investment process, the performance, and the portfolio. So with regards to the performance, it's definitely a part of what we look at, and we rate all of these sections separately. So we don't want to be too overly influenced by the performance of a fund. We want it to be one of the aspects that we look at when we're doing the due diligence on a fund. And with regards to performance as well, like you've mentioned that you've looked at like the outperformance. So this is something that we also look at. And part of our process as well is that we do deep dives into asset classes once a month. So we take it in turns. And so, for example, if we're looking at the UK equity asset class review, then we'll do a deep dive into that asset class and we'll look at the consistency of performance of the funds in that sector as part of that exercise. And for example, we've looked at it recently and we've seen that with the funds, over on average, around 50% of the funds in the sector should outperform around 50% of the time. However, over the last 3 years, that's on a rolling 3-year basis, that number's actually fallen to 19%. So only 19% of the funds in the UK equity sector have outperformed over the last 3 years their benchmark. So definitely that poses problems for like the manager research, and it makes our job harder in terms of our due diligence. And it's one aspect that we look at.
As a manager researcher, how do you look beyond that?
I think you're right, firstly, to call it out. I think it's a big part of manager research. I don't think you can ever get away from it. Ultimately, when you invest into something, you're looking to get some sort of performance. So it's hard for you to completely disentangle yourself from performance. Performance is a very, can be a very attractive thing, right? Because it plays to, not to your mind, but also to your heart. And, you know, it pulls you emotionally to try and invest into something that is, you know, that looks really good on paper. Because otherwise, why would the salesperson would bring it out to you? I think what Mirelle said is really important. I think you do have to take a multifaceted approach, a multi-factor, a framework that looks beyond just performance. Because you have to acknowledge that there is a bias. We're all humans. You know, there is a bias to leaning too much into performance. And the first step is recognizing that bias. The second step is building a process to control, to reduce that bias as much as possible. And this is, you know, looking at other things beyond just performance. And also to look at the market environment in itself that a manager is performing in. You know, you said in the last, you know, when you look at your analysis 3 to 5 years, what that also probably implies is that the market structure would have changed in, you know, each 3 to 5 year period. So a manager could be doing what he or she says on the tin, but the environment that he or she in, she is in, would have changed over time as well. So it's important to recognize that. So if you think about factors, let's take the factor, the size factor, easily understandable. So these are kind of small cap stocks, mid cap stocks that would typically perform better in the early part of the economic cycle, as you're coming out of recession, early part of the cycle, rather than late cycle or in a recession. So understanding that is important. So when you assess the performance of a small cap manager or mid cap manager, they may look very good in the early part of the economic cycle, but may not necessarily look good at the later stage of the economic cycle. And that's important to understand, because you then can, you know, separate what is, you know, a broad economic regime, as you call it, as opposed to the manager's, you know, specific performance.
Well, I just wanted to add in that the main challenge for us is understanding the performance. And I think that's what we look to do mostly. So it's not a case that all outperformance is good performance. So, for example, if we're looking for an emerging market value fund, and part of our due diligence will be to backtest the performance, and we've got lots of proprietary models and external third-party tools that we use to do this. And if our due diligence shows that the performance of the fund has that the fund has outperformed in a period where we wouldn't expect it to, then that would raise as many questions as underperformance of a fund. So we're looking to understand as much as possible when a fund is going to outperform and when it isn't, and if that ties in with the philosophy and process and what the manager is setting out to achieve.
I think you've got a point there. So one of the things that when I speak to distribution people again, and one of the things that when they approach me with funds that are top quartile, et cetera, I actually ask them what funds are bottom quartile, what funds are have underperformed, and I want to understand why, because actually it's not the outperformance and underperformance that's important. I think it's the performance patterns and what regime you're in and what manager's performing in which regime. I want to come back to factors, because I think this is really important in terms of identifying managers. What are, you mentioned size, Francis. What are the other factors which drive that outperformance when you look back in history?
So we think there are five factors that have been, you know, established well in research over a long period of time. Size is one of them. Value, quality, low volatility, and momentum.
And these are equities, right?
These are equity factors, yeah. So I think when you have that foundation to build on, it's really useful and helpful for a manager researcher's perspective. Because again, then you can, you know, take that 10% that the manager's delivered and then understand how much of that 10% is driven by style and how much additional is driven by, you know, a specific manager alpha, if you want to call it that, yeah. Analyzing factors is also useful from a portfolio construction perspective. So coming back to that regime point that we touched on earlier, if we understand, you know, we do the work, we understand the economic regime that we're in, then we can have a, you know, higher conviction, lower conviction on each one of the factors in any particular regime. And that would then, you know, guide both portfolio construction and manager research efforts.
Is there a difference when you look at fixed income? You mentioned those five factors. Is there a difference when you look at fixed income strategies or other asset classes?
There is and there isn't. So there is a bit of an overlap in, you know, the definition of factors in fixed income world. But in fixed income, you also have additional factors like carry, which can be, you know, also value in another form. There's the yield curve factor. There's also the illiquidity factor as well, which you may not necessarily see in equities. I think the challenge with fixed income is the availability of data. We certainly don't have the same length of data going back to the 1920s. And then secondly is the ability to implement fixed income as an asset class is a bit more expensive to trade. And so increasingly, I think there will be solutions to cater to this, but it's much more of a last 10-year phenomenon rather than, you know, the last 100 years.
So the message here is really to, when it comes to past performance, it's not just looking at a historical number. It's really trying to understand how that's been driven, what factors have driven that. And actually, when we look at managers and try and assess them, we're looking at those factor drivers in order to assess how they're going to perform going forward. Is that?
Yeah. And so if, for example, a manager might call themselves a value manager, but it will be our due diligence that determines whether we consider them to be a value manager. Okay. And we will do that using all of the tools that we have available to us.
Yeah, no, makes sense.
So let's move on and think about, you mentioned, morale, people, and that's a key element of assessing a manager and assessing the team. How would you define a good portfolio manager that you would select versus one that you would avoid?
So I think the main challenge is to find out when you're researching, when you're talking with a portfolio manager, is to understand what they're trying to achieve, essentially, and how they think they're going to make money. And this translates into the philosophy of their fund. So there is a risk that I think as individuals and as a society, we look at experts to sound confident and be confident. So for example, just as an analogy, if we go to the doctor, then we're looking for them to sound confident, otherwise it won't give us confidence in what they're saying. So we look at confidence at experts. What we need to make sure is that we're not swayed by this confidence too much, because a good investor may not necessarily be a good presenter or talker, and vice versa. So it's about drilling down into that. So the approach we take is to, like, how do we overcome this? And the approach we take is to always go along with our own questions to when we speak to managers, rather than just to be presented with what they want to tell us. And having that manager research meeting with our own questions is a really important part of our process. And it's to properly understand what they're trying to achieve and to make sure that we're satisfied with all of the questions we've got of the fund. And then having a really good team process when we're back in the office, so that we can discuss and debate the fund, and having a good challenge process between us that might uncover any risks that we may have missed in the meeting.
What do you think about the element of quant in assessing a good manager? We've spoken very much from a qualitative perspective. And now I'm not just talking about performance. There is a role for quant, right? So I just want to understand that a bit more and tease that out, and how we potentially would use quantitative measures and techniques to assess managers overall.
Absolutely. So we've got a range of proprietary quant tools, one of which Francis built, which we can, because of the scale of LGIM, we have really good access to the managers. And one of our first steps is to get the information from the managers and put all of this data through our quant tools. And basically from that, we can see a lot of the quant measures that we would look at. And that forms part of our analysis. We also have access to third-party tools where we can assess the style biases of the fund and other measures, the interaction, the turnover, and all of these measures, like, form a part of our conviction in a fund.
I agree with all of that. I think quant, qualitative are both important in their own right. It's, you know, putting all of the information on the table and, you know, as a manager researcher, understanding what is the story? What is the evidence in front of us? The quant aspect obviously gives us a different angle from the qualitative side. It gives us, you know, an ability to look at different metrics over different time periods, over different market regimes, to tease out the, you know, persistency of factors or styles, to look at performance in, you know, up markets or down markets, also to look at relative performance against a wide universe. Mm-hmm. I think the ability to use quant techniques has grown over the years. So it's much easier for, you know, anyone now to perform an analysis, you know, for a universe of thousands and thousands of funds, whereas historically it would have been manual, cumbersome. And so I think we have to embrace it. We have to blend both, you know, the best techniques in both qualitative research and quantitative research.
Okay, thank you. I want to come back to what you said, Morel, about presenting, because I think this is really important, and being an extrovert and articulating yourself, because I think this is, as a manager researcher, when you're sitting opposite
to the fund manager at the table, and you've got to try and assess the process, the philosophy. Surely if you can articulate this better or articulate this in a more forceful way, taking confidence off the table for a second, that actually that's more attractive, and that means then as a manager researcher, we have innate biases, as you mentioned, we have innate biases to go, actually, I understand this. So therefore, you know, that I'll rate that manager higher than other managers that can't articulate in the same way.
I think it's really important to be aware, as you've just said, of your own biases. Because, so for example, I'm quite a process person and I think in quite a logical way. And I'm very aware that if a manager explains their process in a similar way, then that can lead me to have higher conviction in the fund. Whereas if a manager comes along and the way they present is different, or they're just not as articulate, or they are speaking in a more just not in a process disciplined way, that doesn't mean to say that the fund is not the type of fund that we're looking for and that we need in our portfolios. So I think it's really important to be aware of your own biases when you're talking to managers, and to build that into your view.
I think on that as well, it's true, right? I can't remember what the stat is, of 100% of the information that is presented, more than half is what's not spoken, the body language. So we have to be aware of that. And, when we do our research as well, we try as much as possible to meet different team members. So you're not particularly just swayed by, the first presenter and the only presenter, which would then anchor you on your overall view. You meet this fund manager, you meet that other fund manager, you meet the, another person investment team, you get a more holistic view of the overall proposition.
I think that's such an important point, Francis. Yeah. And you do often find that firms may put out their most articulate or best presenter to meet with manager research teams. So the onus is on us to try to meet with as many people in the team as possible.
So let's move away from managers and move on to manager researchers, so yourselves. So some would argue that manager research has become commoditized over time. Over the last 40 years, I think it has evolved substantially. All the manager research teams now around the city have their own manager research processes. They're all pretty, I'd argue, pretty similar in terms of the kind of structure of those processes. So then maybe the differentiator then becomes the people who are doing the research. So what would you say makes a good manager researcher? And what skills do you think you need to have to be an accomplished one?
I'd say I almost draw parallels to what makes a good fund manager in that question. I'd say two things. One is curiosity, which Mireille touched on. Being a good manager researcher, you have to be curious. You have to ask questions. You have to look at the bigger picture. And you also have to be humble. There'll be times where you get good picks. There'll be times where you don't get, where you get, less good picks. And it's a learning process. It's a journey. So having those two, it's really important. I sometimes think of doing manager research as, to make it sound exciting in my head, not that it's not already exciting, is as though you're working for a magazine and you're about to sample food at a restaurant and you're about to rate that restaurant. What the manager is doing is, trying to present itself to you, open its doors and say, this is how we do it. And, do you like what you see, what's on the table? And as a manager researcher, the skill set you have to have is curiosity. Ask the question, why has the manager built the portfolio this way? What is the manager trying to do? Where's the secret sauce? How is the manager going to outperform or stand out versus that peer group? And so to really try and probe and really understand the dish, the portfolio in front of you. So curiosity is an important skill in doing that. To come back on your point on commoditizing, of the skill set or the the role, I think yes and no. There's definitely certain elements to it that's been commoditized. I do think that there are other elements, the people element, the ability to read, to interact with human beings, to ask the right questions. That bit is very, very difficult to put into a formula and make it scalable. And yeah, experience as well, right? You know, if you've been meeting managers for the last 30 years, 40 years, you naturally see an evolution of the landscape much more than someone who's, you know, entering into the industry with the same set of questions. Yeah.
I agree. I think when I think about constructing a manager research team, I think the first thing I look at is a kind of quantitative baseline, because actually we are a reasonably quantitative team, you know, the way we look at factors and so on and so forth. So actually having a relatively decent quant background or mathematic background is quite important, but not the only thing. And I think we do, you know, when we look to expand the team, actually maybe we look at somebody without a quant background, because I think what you touched on with body language actually is really important. And I think actually somebody to actually really assess that and understand that would be really helpful. I think the ability to, and it's a bit cliche, but think outside the box. But what I really mean is to think in a unique way. Because ultimately, as you say, if it is more commoditized, we have to keep on thinking about ways to be different. And I do think the way we look at factors and the way it drives us to different managers is a big differentiator, and it's different from what else is out there in the market. I think humility, you mentioned that. I think the ability to be humble and recognize that actually sometimes we're not always right. And I think the challenge process that we have kind of helps that. Mm-hmm. I think the ability to receive challenge and not be too defensive. I mean, you know, when we sit down and go through managers, it can be quite brutal, right? Because you know, we are purposely trying to pick holes in the research that you've done and try to understand where it could be wrong, because it's, you know, it being wrong is a massive risk to the portfolios overall. I think ownership, really important. One of the things, as you both know, is that you get thrown in the deep end. You have to assess managers from pretty much day one. When people come into the team, we want to get their kind of original thoughts and so on and so forth. So that again is really important. I think the last thing, I think this is fundamentally the most important probably, is not to drown yourself with bureaucracy, because manager research, you know, it can be, you can put lots and lots of red tape around it. So one of my roles, what I try to do, is to try and take that red tape away from the manager researchers, so you can use your flair, et cetera, to try and assess managers overall. Any thoughts on that list?
I think it's like, yeah, I think it's really interesting, yeah. Interesting discussion. And I think what you say about us like trying to purposely pick holes in each other's work, we're challenging and debating each other the whole time. And I think that we've worked together for quite a long time now, and what I find interesting is that when I present a fund to the team, you would expect by this point that I will know all the questions, or expect all the questions that are going to be asked of me, but I never do. There's always questions that come at me that I haven't thought about, and I think that shows a strong dynamic in the team, that we are all on a learning journey the whole time, and that keeps me learning.
Thank you, Morel. Thank you, Francis. My name is Justin Nukasi. I'm the head of Retail Investments and the Manager Research Group. Thank you for listening to Elgin Talks.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only, and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are by their nature subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.